one of the flaws in our thinking about the Great Resignation was it was all for money. And as we got deeper into that, we've since learned that most of the reason people were fleeing or leaving their organizations were because they weren't aligned with the mission and vision and values of those organizations. And they wanted something more. They wanted something more than just a paycheck. I think what most people are looking for is an organization that they can get behind that mission, vision, and those values.
Welcome to the CEO Coaching International podcast. What we do on this show is we find the world's leading entrepreneurs and CEOs, and we spend about a half hour with them and really dig into their story. We want to understand the strategies and the tips and the tools that they use to make big happen in their business. And by the end of each episode, you'll have actionable ideas that you can implement on your path to big success. To learn more about CEO Coaching International and how we can help you dramatically grow your business, visit us at CEOCoachingInternational.com. A constant challenge for every leader of a fast-growing company is to make sure you have the right people on the team to help you grow to where you want to go and not have people who are holding the company back. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the CEO Coaching International podcast. I'm your host, Steve Sandusky. My guest today is Kurt Wilkin. Kurt is a gifted connector of dots, ideas, and people. For the past 30 years, he has advised high-growth companies, starting his career with Ernst & Young, and today in his roles as co-founder and visionary of Hire Better and managing partner of Bee Cave Capital. In today's show, we discuss how to ensure you have the right people for the company you aspire to be and how to overcome some of the most common people challenges that leaders of fast-growing companies face. With that, please enjoy my conversation with Kurt Wilkin. You've got a new book that just came out here called Who's Your Mike? And we're definitely going to dive into that here a bit. And where I'd like to start is just talking about top talent. And when it comes to top talent, what would you say is one of the biggest mistakes or two that leaders are making today?
The biggest mistake I think leaders are making, especially for high growth companies, is failing to understand exactly what they need, not what they think they need or what an advisor might think they need or a coach might think they need, but what they truly need. So really understanding where you're going as an organization and what those key skills are, as opposed to just cobbling together a job description. That's number one. Sometimes our clients or these entrepreneurs and companies are looking for the wrong talent. The other is this notion that there's going to be a silver bullet that's going to save their day or make their day, and looking for the superhero to come in and make their company. That's usually a recipe for disaster.
So in terms of they're looking for the wrong talent, who is it that they're looking for that they think they need, but in reality, they need someone different?
If you're going through this for the first time, there are a lot of learnings along the way. And one of them is someone tells you that you need a CFO or that you think you need a CFO or, you know, fill in the blank for the title. And what so many people do is they go cobble together a job description for what a CFO or a finance person would look like. Or they ask their professional network, their YPO or EO forum, or maybe, again, it's a coach. And what often they do is they put together a wish list of what this person could do. And it's really not tailored specifically to their situation.
And in terms of the second mistake you mentioned here is thinking that there's a silver bullet or that there's this perfect hire out there. So you're saying that's not the case. So if we can't find the perfect person, does that mean that we're settling or we're compromising, or how should we think about that?
Well, I don't want to mislead and say that there's not great talent out there that can do a lot of things for you, but so many of us, and especially in today's society, we're looking for the easy button. We're looking for the white knight that's going to do everything for us. In the search business, we call it a unicorn, somebody that can sell and deliver and do customer service and, you know, be our everything, right? And that doesn't necessarily exist. I'm not encouraging your listeners to settle. What I'm doing is encouraging them to be realistic. And what are the key traits that we need out of this person? And let's go identify those instead of trying to put so many wishful thinkings on this one position.
Let's say that we've got a fast growing company and we're doubling in size, let's say every 2 or 3 years. How do you think about the type of person that we want to hire that can do the job for the size of the company today versus are they still going to be able to handle the job when the company has doubled in size or tripled in size in just a few years down the road? So I'm really getting at, how do we think about hiring someone for what the company is today versus hiring someone for what the company aspires to be and making sure that that person can grow as the company grows?
Yeah, that's a great question, Steve. And I think I might not like my answer, but my answer is going to be the person you hire today to help you get to that next level may not be the person to take you to the following level, or they may not be in that same position for that next step. So the challenge I see for so many entrepreneurs is we have very talented legacy employees, loyal lieutenants who help them get to a certain point, and they've simply outgrown them for that position. And so they struggle. They reach a ceiling where they can't grow anymore. So what I would encourage your listeners to do is identify the talent to get me to that next level, and then I'll deal with it in 2 years when I get there, as opposed to trying to find somebody that's going to be able to survive 3 years of 100% growth.
So continuing with this example of the company that's growing fast. So how can a leader identify the skills and the attributes that it needs in its people to deal with that fast growth? So, I mean, obviously there's a lot of companies out there that might be growing 5 or 10% per year, and you're not necessarily going to have to keep up your skills dramatically for that kind of growth. But if we're doubling every 2 or 3 years, that's a whole different story. So what would you say are some of those skills and attributes that you have found that people who can grow with a company that's growing that fast, even if they may not be able to make the second doubling or the third doubling over time?
I'll answer the question two ways. First is if I think of your team holistically, and that is if I'm growing north of 20 to 30% per year, it becomes to compound, as you said. And if all six members of my leadership team, for example, are going through this for the first time, we're going to learn a lot of lessons the hard way. And many of them, we don't have to learn the hard way. We can leverage someone else's experience who's done this before. So I would like to have one or two members of that six-person team who have done this before. So that's one part of the answer. As far as specific positions and people that you're looking for on your team, you're definitely looking for that entrepreneurial spirit, that roll up your sleeves and do whatever it takes type of mentality. And again, I would love to have somebody who's done this before. And the way that I encourage our clients, and I would encourage your listeners to think about who you need, is think about, you do plan to double for the next 2 or 3 years. What is it going to take to get there? What are the key initiatives that are going to drive that growth? And then what does your team look like today, and where are the gaps for those initiatives? Then I would specifically look for people who have the experience or at least the skills to drive those key initiatives. I'm looking for specific talent, not generalist at this point.
And let's say that I'm the founder of the company and I bootstrapped this thing. We started at zero. Maybe now we've got some outside capital and this thing is really being turbocharged. So how can I, as the leader, ensure that I can continue to grow as fast as the company is growing so that I don't get bounced out of the organization by the board because I haven't been able to grow my capabilities, grow my skill sets, and expand my thinking as fast as the company's growing?
If you don't mind, Steve, I want to give an example out of my book, Who's Your Mike, that you referenced earlier. I want to tell a story about Mike really quick, and then I want to come back to your specific question. So Mike is a key employee of yours. He's a key lieutenant who's been with you for many years. And in the example in my book, he was basically your buddy that turned into be your accountant, your bookkeeper, controller, and ultimately became your CFO as you grew and titles were cheap. So you gave him all the titles. At some point, you look up after exponential growth, Mike's in over his head. He's trying to do things he's never done before. He's probably never built a team before. He's working his tail off, but he just doesn't know how to get to that next level because he's never done it. So the question I ask is, who's your Mike? Every entrepreneur either has a Mike, has had, or will have a Mike. And that's some of the premise of the book. There's lots more we can dive into. The question you asked was about the founder. It's one of the number one questions I get from my entrepreneurial buddies or people that read the book is, what if I'm Mike? And that's a great question. There's going to be a point, there may be a point where you need to bring in the next level leader for your role and bring in a CEO, which is exactly what I did with Hire Better. I stepped aside a few years ago. And if you have the capability and the ability to be a lifelong learner and you're willing to be coached, I would say that's the step you could take if you want to stay in that chair, which is find mentors, find coaches, surround yourself with experienced talent who can help you get there again so you don't have to learn all the lessons.
You just mentioned that you stepped aside a few years ago. So tell me about your process. How did that work for you? What were you thinking? And then what role did you move into when you stepped aside from, I don't know if it was the president or the CEO role? Tell me a little bit about what happened there.
Yeah, you know, for our clients, we conduct an exercise we call strategic talent planning, which is helping you build a roadmap for the growth of your company. And one of the things I challenge our clients with is, let's talk about your highest and best use. What are things that only Steve or only Kurt can do that would drive value for the company? And what are some things that you could offload that, frankly, you're not very good at and someone else is much better than you at? And so I went through the same exercise myself. And what I found, Steve, is I love this. I love sharing the message with folks. I love conducting those strategic talent planning sessions with my clients. I love helping and serving other leaders to be the best they can be. What I don't love doing is running my own damn business. I don't love managing the P&L. I don't love the people issues and challenges and opportunities. I don't love all the things it takes to run a business. So I said, you know what? I'm going to put myself in as the chairman, and I'm going to go bring in a very talented CEO who's better at those things than me and let them build the machine.
So I think you were in a good position there in the sense that you voluntarily chose to make that transition and you were happy to give up some of these other duties here that you didn't enjoy about running a company, and you were able to just focus on your highest and best use and the things that you enjoy the most. What about those situations where we have the reluctant founder, the reluctant leader whom the business has outgrown, but the ego is getting in the way? They don't really want to step aside. Maybe it's starting to get a little bit ugly. How do you counsel an organization in that type of situation?
That question has so much hair on it, Steve. I'll do the best I can just with the limited information. That what you're asking is someone else who is presumably in, you know, in control, maybe a board, maybe an investor, is basically saying that you're no longer suited to be the long-term CEO. First, I would counsel them that you're dealing with people, you're not dealing with widgets, and there is hubris, there is ego involved, and there's got to be a way to talk to Kurt in such a way that encourage him to do his highest and best use, right? Versus the grind, if you will. For the entrepreneur, if that's happening to you, I would encourage you to take a look in the mirror and try to understand what you're being taught here. Maybe the person who is having this conversation is a jerk and just, you know, doesn't know what they're doing, which is probably your first thought in your mind. Perhaps there's some truth to that. What can I learn from it? How can I leverage this to become a better leader? And maybe the answer is that I'm not the CEO in charge of everything. If I don't let my ego get in the way, I can be the best damn chief technology officer, the best damn sales leader, the best business development person, the best product leader, whatever the case may be that you're really strong at, and partner with the right person to run the day-to-day. Because honestly, most of us who came up as entrepreneurs, we don't love that stuff anyway.
As you're well aware, we've had a lot of issues here in recent years when it comes to staff in terms of things like quiet quitting and all the disruption that COVID had caused and all of these issues around virtual work, working from home. And now we have a lot of the larger organizations in particular that are requiring that their team members come back into the office 2-3 days a week. And that's certainly ruffling feathers of a lot of the employees. So I'd love to get your thoughts on maybe just the bigger picture of how leaders need to be thinking about the values of the organization and the culture of their organization and how they can communicate that publicly in such a way that they are going to attract applicants and new hires to their company that are in sync with the values of the organization, with the culture of the organization, so that these issues that I just described may not be that big of an issue because we're finding a really strong match between who we are as a company, what we stand for, and the kinds of people that are really attracted to that. So there's a good match there. So how do we think about that from a maybe a big picture standpoint?
You know, I'll use an example that many of us heard a couple of years ago, and that's the Great Resignation. And one of the flaws in our thinking about the Great Resignation was it was all for money. And as we got deeper into that, we've since learned that most of the reason people were fleeing or leaving their organizations were because they weren't aligned with the mission and vision and values of those organizations. And they wanted something more. They wanted something more than just a paycheck. Now, things have shifted over the last couple of years since, so that some of this is table stakes. But I think what most people are looking for is an organization that they can get behind that mission, vision, and those values. So the more we can attract, as you said, folks who have a similar vision or can buy into our vision, it's going to be easier for us, or we're going to be able to have that communication about coming into the office without pissing a bunch of people off. And so that's the biggest thing for me, and I would encourage your listeners to do, is really pay attention to what they stand for, not what they say they stand for, what they truly stand for. And if they're not living those values and they're not living that mission, you're not going to be able to get people bought into coming into the office for any stretch of time.
And this is a two-way street. So the company needs to be clear on who they are and what they stand for. And in the interview process, they need to do a good job of understanding the candidate that they're talking to, what they believe, and if there's a match, and vice versa. The candidate needs to do a good due diligence process on the company that they're talking to get an understanding of what they truly stand for. So from either one of those or both of those perspectives, do you have any thoughts on how each party can do a better job of making sure they're asking the right questions? I think you mentioned here, observing the behavior of the company in particular. Are they living up to what they say, what they may have published on their website, for example? Any more detail on how each party can do a better job in that, quote, due diligence process?
Sure. I'll start with the company. Things that you can do to ensure that your candidates are on the same page are spend plenty of quality time with them and don't make it just a one-way interview. Make the interview more about living your values and maybe even give them some exercises. Tell me about what you hear when you hear integrity or whatever your core value might be. And make it just as much about core values as it is, do they have the ability? If it's an executive level role or more, you know, senior role, I would absolutely encourage you to spend a lot of time. Don't rush the process. You're basically making a long-term commitment on both sides. Let's get it right. And remember that some of the candidates you're talking to are looking for a job. They probably don't care what some of your values are. They're just looking for a job until they find the next opportunity that maybe is more core value aligned. So understand that not everybody you're looking for is looking for a career or a calling or really cares about that. From a candidate perspective, man, there's so much you can do to research whether the company you're going to work for does have an alignment on values and are they living them. From things you can check out on their website or Glassdoor or Facebook, during the interview process, you can tell if you're asked the right questions, if the mission that they espouse verbally is really being lived.
You mentioned that not everyone is concerned about your corporate values and they may just be looking for a job. And I know in your book, Who's Your Mike, you talk about be player Bob and being a role player. So how should leaders think about the different levels of commitment that their team members may have? So whether they're a role player, whether they're a B player, if I'm a fast-growing company, should I be okay with that? Or should I really be looking for people that are looking at this as a career, as a calling, and not just as a job, as a placeholder until I can find something better?
It's a good question. Let me clarify a misnomer on B player Bob. B player Bob is not necessarily not a hard worker. He is just not defined as an A player as Vern Harnish and Top Grading and these other folks define an A player, which includes top 10% of their a role for their position and that their former boss would enthusiastically rehire them. B Player Bob may not be your future CEO, but B Player Bob may be pretty damn good at what he does, and that's okay. A lot of people think if you don't have the interest in moving up and progressing through the organization that you're not a keeper. You might not meet the definition of an A player, but you're still pretty darn good at your job. Now, your other question, it's not quite quiet quitting, but it's basically doing just enough. To me, that could be a cancer. If people in the organization are just getting by, just, you know, doing enough to not get fired, there can be a lot of waste in that, especially for your high growth companies. That's where if I'm an employer, I'm looking for people who are bought into my mission and vision and are willing to bust their ass to make it happen.
And when you do come across that person who's doing just enough to not get fired as a leader, that's extremely frustrating. So what do you do as a leader to help inspire that person, to motivate that? And I know that's a tricky area too, because there's only so much that extrinsic motivation can do. Somehow we've got to get fired up internally. We've got to get that intrinsic motivation to get us excited to do the work as opposed to feeling like I have to do the work. So how do you counsel leaders who have someone who's doing okay, but you know they're capable of so much more, but they're just not given that yet?
Yeah, well, when you were first talking, Steve, my first inclination was I haven't seen too many people turn on the passion for a company. What I did glean was there are people who are perhaps in the wrong role or doing the wrong things. So there may be a chance that you can fire them up by making sure they're in the right role and doing the right things. But if they're doing a half-assed job for you in another role and they're not asking for more, they're not asking for clarity of role, they're not asking for other opportunities, I'm not sure there's a whole lot of saving that. I'll give you a quick example. It's in my book, Who's Your Mike? And that is at Hire Better. And one of the reasons I stepped aside as CEO is I'm not a very good manager. I feel like I'm a strong leader and I feel like I've got a strong vision, but man, I'm not very good at managing people and holding people accountable and all the metrics and all the things that that takes. We were struggling. We were growing revenue-wise, but we weren't growing the bottom line. And I had a friend come in and give me some counsel. And after a couple of days, he came in and gave me this assessment, which basically sums up everything I'm about to just said. He said, Kurt, you built a lifestyle business for everybody but you. And that hit me hard. I was not holding people accountable. They were all doing just enough to get by. I was the only one busting my hump. And that told me right there that I'm obviously not doing a very good job of either inspiring people and definitely not managing.
Well, I'd love to hear the person that you brought in to actually be more of that manager, to help get the organization with a little more accountability, to enhance the bottom line. As you look at that person, what are some of the things that that person did? What are some of the characteristics that they have? And what are some of the learnings that you gleaned through that process of bringing a person like that into the organization and the kind of impact that they can have?
Yeah, you know, I think many entrepreneurs are very good at the vision and maybe sales or product development, many things that drive the early success of your organization. What many of us, and me specifically, struggle with is the next piece. I like to tell people, I can inspire you to charge that hill and we're going to take it at dawn, right? We're going to bust our ass to make it happen. What I can't do or don't do well is all the planning that needs to go into charging that hill, all the, you know, supplies lists and all the role definition and role accountability and all that stuff I struggle with. So that's the counterpart or the partner I would encourage many of your entrepreneurs to look for, somebody who you respect and you trust, who can build out all the detail execution plan and hold people accountable to achieve your vision.
I want to talk a little bit about your company, Hire Better. So give me the overview of what you guys are doing, and then I've got a couple of follow-up questions from that.
Yeah, you know, we're in the talent space. We consider ourselves strategic talent partners. Our niche is helping our clients go from, you know, past the scrappy startup phase. They're already past there. We help them scale their organization, usually professionalizing their organization. And the way we do that is with really strong executive search function. We have talent as a service, which is a monthly, basically outsourcing much of your talent acquisition function or all of it. A project consulting team that sometimes your need is not a CFO, a permanent CFO. Maybe it's a fractional person, or maybe it's a special project to help you get to the next level. So we are the strategic talent partners for high growth entrepreneurs.
And over the years that you have been in business, have you seen a shift at all in the issues or the nature of the challenges that the kind of organizations that you work with have faced? Has there been any difference, or is it like it's the same problems and challenges over and over again?
Well, that's part of the impetus for the book, was I saw so many challenges over and over again, and many of the same stories were just repetitive. So many of the characters in the book are all just stories of folks that I've seen over the 25 years of working with entrepreneurs. You know, there's nuances. The timing of the, you know, whether it's COVID or the 2008 bank crisis or, you know, whatever the case may be, there are some shifts, but for the most part, people are people, and we see many of the same consistent themes.
Okay, so we've talked about B player Bob. So give me another example or two from the book of some of these common issues that you've seen repeat over and over.
Yeah, so each chapter is a different archetype or character, basically stories to help you uncover your own challenges and opportunities. Harry the Hustler is one of the chapters. Harry is your kick-ass sales guy who is able to basically be your partner in crime for the first 3 or 5 years of your existence and can sell ice to Eskimos. He's great at his job. So when it's time to scale and you need to build out a next level sales function, you recognize, I need to bring in a sales leader, someone that can, you know, grow my sales team. And I probably need to add 4 or 5 new Harrys. And so you talk about this with Harry and he raises his hand and says, boss, I want to be the sales leader. So you promote Harry to VP of sales. But the problem is Harry is not a VP of sales. He's not a sales leader. He's not a sales manager. He's a salesperson. And so what happens when you ask Harry to start building systems and account management function and all the collateral and everything that you need to build out a true next level sales team, he struggles. So now you've not only lost your best salesperson, you've also got a really crappy manager. But what do you do with Harry?
Do you often see that the best salespeople want to move into management? Because I think oftentimes if you're the sales manager, you may be making less money than your top salespeople. So do they typically want to move into management, or are they happy being a high producing salesperson?
So what you just said is absolutely correct. But many times for entrepreneurial companies with your Harry, he's going through this for the first time, they have an ego, just like we talked about before. And Harry wants the sales title, the sales leader title. He wants to build a fiefdom of people below him. Or maybe he wants just the prestige, but he doesn't realize that it's probably less pay and that it's not a commission-based structure anymore. And it's not a lot of the things that make him happy as an individual contributor.
How about another example here?
Yeah, sticking with the sales theme, we have Pipeline Paul, the big swinging, you know what, from the outside, who's the sales leader. He's got all kinds of connections. He just was in, you know, played golf with Michael Dell, and he, you know, so-and-so was the best man in his wedding. He just knows everybody, right? And he can glad hand and kiss babies like the best of them. So he talks a great game. You bring him in to be this silver bullet to save your sales function. And as he gets going, he's like, oh, we don't have the collateral that we need. I need to build this. I need to hire, you know, 4 more people in my organization. Now, this is next level stuff, Kurt. You've been, you know, in the minor leagues. We're talking about the major leagues now. This is big stuff. And over time, this pipeline that he keeps talking about never seems to matriculate down to the P&L. It's all stuff that's still in the pipeline. And you look up 6 or 12 months later and nothing seems to be happening on the sales side. And Paul seems to be full of crap. And so you wake up one day and I finally got to get rid of Paul. So that's why I think there's so many people in the sales world who have 12 to 18 months on their resume as a salesperson, because they're probably more talk and more hype than reality.
So I think in Texas, they would call that big hat, no cattle.
All hat, no cattle, exactly.
All right. Let's talk about the executive level for a moment here. And tell me a little bit about how you think about the executive function in terms of when you're doing executive search. What are some of the attributes that you're looking for in executives today? Maybe keeping in mind what's happening with technology, what's happening in the economy, and are there attributes today and going forward in the foreseeable future that you think executives need to have based on what's going on in society today and what we can project for the future?
Steve, I appreciate the question and I can see why you asked it, because the world is ever changing. And I know that the experts out there, the McKinseys of the world, are always talking about what's the next hot thing that leaders need in their repertoire. So today it might be AI, you know, 20 years ago it was the internet. And I think there's always going to be some hot new thing that leaders are need for their future. So we always need to be in an ever learning learner mindset. What I would say is evergreen are the ability to get the most out of your people and be a good conductor, be able to get everybody aligned, rowing in the right, in the same direction and playing to their strengths. If you can attract leaders that can do that, and if the people that report to them don't have the capabilities to do what needs to be done, then they have the autonomy to go find the next person who can, you're going to be making beautiful music.
We're all familiar with Netflix, and they were in the news, gosh, it's been a number of years now, when they came out with a PowerPoint deck that talked about their people philosophy. And one of the things that came out of that, and Patty McCord, who was their HR leader, people leader, she wrote a book. And one of the things that I recall from that, they said that obviously they're a high performance company. And they almost, I think of it as a sports team where we come together, we get the best people possible. We've got something that we want to accomplish. And as long as you are the high performer, as long as you can help the company accomplish what it is we're trying to accomplish, great. But as soon as what you're trying to accomplish and what we need to accomplish are diverging, or you're just not on that same high performance growth mindset that you were for the first few years, then it's time for us to part ways. Now, some people might think of that as a pretty hardcore, ruthless way to think about the business. And I'd love to get your thoughts on maybe that as a philosophy, and then also perhaps as, well, that's great. That's Netflix. That's the way they think about it. They're going to attract people who find that attractive. And there's other companies that have different ways of thinking about it, and they're going to attract a different kind of person. So is it as simple as every company has to decide who they are, what they want to do, and they're going to attract those kinds of people? And maybe we view it as, hey, if I can get 3 great years from you, that's all I'm looking for. And we're going to part friends and you're going to move on to the next opportunity.
I definitely understand what Patty is espousing. And I believe that most high growth companies need a similar mindset. What I feel many entrepreneurs, we all make mistakes of holding on to people for too long because they were loyal lieutenants in the past, and we don't know how to make that mind shift. There's a very common theme, a thing that you've heard out there, the what got you here won't get you there. You can say the same thing about people. Who got you here won't get you there. Yesterday's hero is tomorrow's problem. Lots of things. If your listeners would focus more time and energy on assessing their existing team and making replacements for next level talent, they will get there faster, but you also don't want to sell your soul to get there, right? So there's a balance. Absolutely.
All right. Well, Kurt, as we wrap up here, I just have a couple more things. One is there anything else that you want to share that we haven't talked about, or perhaps reiterate something that we have talked about?
Let's touch on team members who you don't want to fire, but they're no longer filling the role that you want them to, and our natural tendency to maybe reassign them or find a role for them. I think that's a common theme. We call that character bounce around Betty in my book, just going from job to job. Some of that can be healthy if it's a great employee and you can put them in the right role. And some of it can be toxic if the person just continues to bounce and underperform. And that can be a long-term problem for your company if you hold on to people too long, just because you don't want to have that hard discussion and make that hard decision.
Yeah, I think that's such an important point. And very few of us enjoy confrontation. Very few of us enjoy having these difficult conversations, and particularly around people issues in an organization. If you realize that this isn't the right person for the organization anymore, and you've given them every opportunity to step up their level of performance, or offered them opportunities in a different role that might take better advantage of their skill sets. And if you've exhausted all of those avenues and it's still not working, one of the things that I've found is that when it's not working for you, it's not working for them either. And to me, the humane thing to do is to have that honest conversation with them and do it respectfully, but let them know that this isn't working. And oftentimes they just need the impetus to move on to a new opportunity somewhere else that's a better fit. And even though it may be painful, or they think it's painful, because the comfort of the known is better than the fear of the unknown. But once they get on the other side of that and they realize there is something better out there for me, I found that almost in every situation, it's been better for the person to move them out of the situation that isn't working for you, that's not working for them, and just giving them that push, that impetus to move on some short-term pain for long-term gain. I don't know if you have had that kind of experience as well.
Absolutely agree with 100%. Those conversations don't happen soon enough. And usually that person is going to be in a better spot after they manage their own change. But usually they come out in a better spot in the right role or the right career, maybe even start their own business. It's amazing how many good things come out of those challenges.
Excellent. All right, Kurt. Well, let's wrap up here with two or three rapid fire questions. And the first one I'd like to ask you is, what would you say is one trait that you think has contributed the most to your success?
I'm a connector. So I think my ability to connect both people to opportunities or people to other people, or connecting your ideas to solutions, has been a great trait.
And this is something that we don't often like to talk about, and that is failure. So as you look back in your professional career, is there something that you would say was a failure? And if so, how do you feel about that now? And what did you learn from that?
After I sold my company, I was now working for a larger enterprise, and we had to terminate one of our leaders. And I had HR come in and tell me how I had to make it happen and how I had to follow these rules and be very strict and have this conversation and basically walk this employee out the door, which didn't feel good, didn't feel right, but I did it because that's what HR said I should do, or that's what my boss said I should do. Man, Steve, I felt so dirty about that. And upon reflection, I never would have done it that way again. I want to treat people like human beings, and I want to treat them with respect. And I could have done a so much better job of handling that situation. And it's a time that I really didn't like who I was. The learning is trust your gut. And even though there might be some legal things you might have to do, you don't have to treat people like dirt, like criminals when you terminate.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you sharing that. I can just hear it coming through your voice here, how difficult that situation was and how you still feel about it today. So I appreciate you sharing that. Final one here I want to ask is, as your company has grown over the years, what would you say was the activity that was the hardest for you to let go of and let somebody else do?
I'm a servant leader. I'm also a pleaser. And so if I sell you something, I want to make sure it goes well. And if it doesn't, I just feel horrible about it. As a byproduct, I'm an information junkie. You might call it micromanaging, but I want to know what's going on with that client because I want to know that they're being served properly. Where I've gotten myself in trouble is when I just continue that. It's hard to scale that, right? So what I've had to do is really trust. First of all, hire the right people and then trust that they're going to do a great job and allow me to relinquish some of that. Maybe control, you might call it. I'd call it information, but other people might call it control.
All right, Kurt. Well, I think we will go ahead and wrap it there. So I appreciate you being on the show today. And for folks that want to stay connected with you and stay in touch, what would be the best way for them to do that? And of course, any special places for people to get the book or learn more about that?
Yeah, my LinkedIn is Kurt Wilkin. So it's KURTWILKIN. Happy to connect there. The book is called Who's Your Mic? And we have a URL website. It's whosyourmic.com. There's a great quiz you can take if you think you might have a Mike or a Paul or a Rita on your team. And then the other thing that I would love to share is the podcast we've been doing for the last couple of months, Steve. We relaunched called Unlocking Moves. And it's our way to inspire entrepreneurs and understand my guest stories about those key pivotal moments that really shape the trajectory of their career, their business, and how we can inspire other entrepreneurs to make their own unlocking moves.
Excellent. All right, Kurt, again, thanks for being on the show and congratulations on the new book.
Steve, thanks so much for having me. I love what you're doing to inspire and really coach entrepreneurs and CEOs out there.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Now, I have a question for you. How are you going to implement and benefit from the ideas that you hear on our show? Well, we would love to have a conversation with you about that. So please visit us at ceocoachinginternational.com. We can then set up a call and we can talk about how we can help you make big happen in your business. Thanks, and we look forward to sharing our next episode with you.